Bluetooth versus wired headphones is like a crazy amount of difference.
Yeah.
I don't know. The AirPods Pro work pretty well.
I mean, yeah, but compared to a wired in, 0 megasecond difference.
Well, yeah, but
it's still...
The AirPods have the one chip that makes it better than...
The one chip to rule them all.
It's like the W1 or W2 chip or whatever, and it like has way less lag.
That just sounds like another little device Apple created just so it wouldn't work with anything else.
Oh, you don't have the Apple chip in it? Well, I'm sorry, your Bluetooth headphones suck.
It still works with other stuff. It just doesn't have the low latency, low lag or whatever.
That's fair. I see it.
And I'm giving Isaiah a free pair of AirPods tomorrow, so.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I was thinking that would be a good gift for my parents. Their phones, they don't have the headphone jack, and it's just, I don't know how you can live without a headphone jack.
I don't have a headphone jack.
I don't have an aux cord, but these headphones... The Apple ones, it came with the lightning port or whatever.
Just another Apple product that you have to buy. God, they're
this
good.
This one came with my phone.
Everybody says that, but almost every phone nowadays is like going to no port.
Nope, I refuse. I refuse to buy a phone without a headphone port. Need that 3.5.
Well, don't buy any of the new Samsung phones.
I haven't. I've stuck with my Galaxy S9.
Pretty soon, phones are gonna be... The new Ken dolls.
What? They just follow you around?
What?
What are you talking about?
No ports. It's going to be all bare.
You definitely lost me for a second there.
Yeah.
I feel like this is like the coldest it's been like in a long time, like for this long.
Yep. -8 or -15 in Kansas on Monday.
Jeez. Yeah. So I'm staying in. And you should too. And I hope you're enjoying this on that Monday that we are talking about. Beautiful Monday when this episode will go live. You can just sit at home with your fire and put us on the speaker and let us serenade you with our voices. Is that how you serenade?
Demon Sunday's -20 in Minneapolis.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
-6 high.
That's not even the feels like. That's the actual temperature. Yeah. Those are the days where on the radio, they'll just be like, if you see someone stopped and in their car, please stop and pick them up because they might die. It's like everyone's just kind of watching out for each other. It's like, hey, if you're stopped on the side of the road, you've got 30 minutes. Figure it out. Yeah. If your car dies, good luck. Dude, I remember driving to work on the highway and like having that thought, like if I spin out or something and like get in a ditch and no one can see me, I have 30 minutes to find safety. So that's why my car is always packed with like thermal blankets and like fully survivable gear.
Just like Tim Tebow said in the Florida National Championship game, we have 30 minutes for the rest of our lives.
Wow. Prolific. I don't think it's quite the same situation, but I like the spirit.
All right, Eddie. So you boys want to get this thing rolling?
Yes.
I'm ready.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Unsolved Dimension. I'm one of your hosts today, Adam, and alongside me is Isaiah.
What's going on, everybody?
And Jamin.
We're here ready for an expedition through the great new world. It's America. You'll understand what I'm saying later.
Yeah.
It's an inside joke. We'll let you in a bit. So to start this week off, we're going to take a look at one of the first explorers and dive into something that he discovered in one of the largest cover-ups in centuries. Texas and Oklahoma were thought to have an unimaginable wealth of gold and silver ever since the first pioneers started to explore the land. In 1535, Spanish explorer Francisco Vázquez de Coronado sailed from Spain and settled down in what is now known as Mexico City. In 1538, he was appointed as the governor of the province of Nueva Galicia. Francisco heard the legends of the seven cities of Cibola and was determined to find these golden cities. You know, if I have to have a leader, this sounds like a pretty kick-ass leader. He's like, yep, we're settling down, we're setting up. Now let's go find these golden cities.
Is this like El Dorado?
Yeah, that's one of the seven cities.
Okay.
El Dorado.
So there's seven of them?
Yep.
Hey, that's a movie.
It is. It's a good movie, too. And I feel like he probably should have been focusing more on like building up his city and governing instead of his expeditions. But that's not for me to say. I mean, they elected him. He was brought in maybe because he said he was going to find them cities made of gold. Who knows?
I'd like that. Definitely somebody Nicolas Cage could get behind.
Oh, 100%.
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Doesn't seem as hard anymore as he made it seem.
So, Coronado led an expedition into the southwest United States with a party of 1,000 men in search of riches. They searched for months, but had no luck finding the cities of gold. The following year, most of his party abandoned him and returned to Mexico. Coronado continued his expedition with a handful of men, but in the spring of 1542, he returned to Mexico City with nothing to show for his 2.5-year journey. He lost a lot of credibility from this experience, but after a while, he regained his position as city councilman, where he remained until his death in 1554.
How old was this dude?
You know, math. He was 25 when he got there, and so he died at like 35?
Yeah, that's like our age.
35, 45. He died at like 45, I think, or 50. I don't know. Do math. We're not here to do math. We're here to discover the undiscovered.
I can't math's very good.
According to my calculations, I don't know.
It's a good answer.
Adam, did you figure it out yet? We're stalling for you.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Doesn't matter. So, you might be wondering what any of this has to do with Shaman's Portal in Beaver, Oklahoma, because that's the name of this episode, and that's why you're here. Well, it wasn't until his journal was released in the 1900s that some truly remarkable discoveries were revealed. From his expedition came tales of locations in Texas that contained tunnels full of gold and silver. One story stands out from the others, and that is the tale of Shaman's Portal in an area that the Native Americans call No Man's Land. And you might be wondering why they called it No Man's Land. It's not really for the reason you were expecting.
Yes, I was wondering that.
Yeah. This area, it's desert. It's just a bunch of sand dunes. So you'd think it's because no one can live there. There's not a lot of water sources. But truth of the matter is, it's because anyone that wanders into it doesn't come back. So that should be a good warning.
Do the sand dunes just swallow them?
Yeah. I mean, you've all seen Aladdin. This is sand dunes will open up into a tiger head and take anyone down.
Aladdin?
What'd you say, Adam? Aladdin?
Aladdin.
Aladdin. Who's that? Oh, Aladdin!
I have Aladdin news.
Aladdin?
Aladdin news.
Oh my gosh. I thought you were just like casting a spell on me or something.
So tell me a little bit about this Beaver, Oklahoma. Named after a furry dam builder.
I don't know why it's named Beaver, Oklahoma. From what I've studied, there's not one beaver there. So Beaver, Oklahoma, it's a small town on the panhandle of Oklahoma. The area takes up 500,000 acres, which 300,000 acres contain nothing but sand dunes and small patches of greenery. So a little, what are they called? You see a mirage of an oasis? Kind of little, little oasis things. Yeah, looks like there's some of those out there, but otherwise pretty barren. The area is best known today as being a rad spot to bring your ATV and any off-road vehicle. Now, I looked into this place, and it looks like fun.
Yeah, it does. You use the word rad.
Absolutely.
I think I know why it's called Beaver, Oklahoma. They got hairy women.
Of course.
What about these Halloween events that go on there?
It's a popular Halloween spot because, I mean, you could go there, have fires, shoot off fireworks, and it's usually still pretty warm being in Oklahoma. But a lot of them go there because of the rumors about Shaman's Portal.
And try to enter the portal?
Yeah, well, try to observe it and, yeah, enter the portal, which is code for probably just, like, a lot of drugs. I don't know. I did get a little concerned, though, when I watched some interviews with their park ranger, because he just straight up says that we don't really keep track of anyone that goes missing. We're just here to help and answer questions and stuff. It's like, isn't your one job to, like, know if people go missing or to help them out in that way?
They probably don't have, like, that many people for that. I mean, because nobody, like, lives there, actually, really. I mean, people do, but...
Yeah, and the 300,000 acres, not really anyone's there. Then this park ranger, he's just straight up like, yeah, we don't keep a record of anyone that goes missing. What do you do?
They just don't have enough resources, Jamin.
So if you're going out there, don't go missing, because no one will care.
Yeah, don't be expecting a search party.
All right, so back to Coronado. The party that Coronado was leading had a native guide to help them through the rough terrain. The guide warned them about the area, saying that it deserves your utmost respect, and informed them that men go missing all the time here. Legends say that the area contains a gateway to the unknown, and the guide pleaded with Coronado to avoid the area altogether, just as the local tribes have done for generations. Coronado was not convinced, and decided to press on. But literally, isn't this the one thing that Coronado would absolutely go for? If he wanted to keep Coronado out, he should have just said, oh, it's just a bunch of sand, don't worry about it. It's better if we go this way. Instead, he's like, legends say that people go missing and there's a hidden portal. Of course, Coronado's gonna be like, take me! Beeline to it!
He's like, that way! That's where I want to go!
I think this whole thing's the guide's fault. He should have absolutely been like, there's nothing over there. Don't worry about it.
He could have not even mentioned that way. He could have just been like, we're going this way.
Following that, the native guide refused to go, so he either waited for them at their next destination or just left them completely. The records are a little unclear. Coronado should have listened, because one night, soon after they arrived, something unexplainable happened. A friar who went with Coronado kept a journal that recounts the events that took place.
That night by the sandy hills, we had been warned by the natives to avoid. Lost we three able-bodied men of valor, Juan Visconio, Marco Romano, and Juan Munoz. They had been hunting game for the men when the three fated soldiers were taken from us in a lightning bolt of green. He went on to say, it was the work of El Diablo.
In case you didn't know, El Diablo means the Diablo.
You mean the devil?
Well, the devil is another way that some may put it.
I just like to say, where was Jamin in that? I was just encapsulated.
Did I take on the friar?
What does the friar do? Isn't he like the priest or something?
I think so.
Maybe.
And I think he fries some food, maybe.
Yep. I mean, it's in the name.
I think Isaiah's wrong on that part.
We would fry up the tortillas!
He's a cook.
Like, Friar Tuck. Yeah, He's a brother and a member of one of the...
The clergy or something?
Mendicant orders.
Cool. Glad we got to the bottom of that.
He's wearing that brown thing with the white rope with like a cross, you know?
Yeah, like in Robin Hood.
Yeah, swinging the smoke back and forth. That's the friar, right?
I mean, if you remember Friar Tuck... From Robin Hood. That's a friar. So, I know you said Coronado kept journals, but did anybody else with him keep any journals, or was it just him? He's like, screw you guys, I get to keep all the journals.
You know, Coronado and the friar were the only two journals that we are kind of able to either recover or just pull information from, because this is strange. This is a weird thing. Coronado had all of his men, and I think the friar, because he was a kind of higher up or priest or whatever his title was, he was able to keep his, but everyone was ordered to destroy theirs. So because of what happened, he wanted no accounts of what took place.
Interesting.
I mean, something crazy must have went down then.
Yeah. I think so.
I mean, you said a little bit about what the friar said, but I'm sure other stuff went down too.
Yeah, we'll never know. We have very little information about it.
We'll just get Bill and Ted to go back.
I don't know. I feel like Coronado maybe isn't the best leader if he can only convince like a handful of people from his thousand to keep journeying on for Golden Cities. And then when three people from his party get abducted by green lightning, he tells everyone never to talk about it. I think he had a couple flaws as a leader.
Hey, if you disappear, don't tell anybody.
Where's my husband? You shall never ask that again.
What husband? You never had one.
So, yeah, they returned to Mexico City later that year, and they were ordered to never talk about the events that took place ever again. And just a little icing on the cake, No Man's Land is also noted as being an Indian burial site, which, of course, any creepy place has got to have some dead people buried underneath of it. That's just like a rule of thumb. Yeah. If there's no dead people underneath of it, I don't even want to give it a second thought. Fake. So this event is claimed to be one of the largest cover-ups in centuries. It wasn't until 1993 that any real investigation began and pieces from Coronado's journal started to be put together. Disappearances in the area occurred periodically, with the last known rapture taking place in 1987. They all had one thing in common: the green lightning.
Sounds like a superhero.
Yeah, is this like Shazam?
The green lightning.
My farts turn into lightning.
It's bolts. A cool superhero name. A lot of the accounts don't like make it sound like it was just regular lightning. It sounds like that these were almost, I mean, we mentioned it in earlier podcasts, but ball lightning, kind of that phenomenon. It sounded something similar to that.
Yeah.
But specifically green.
Green ball lightning. Was there blue ball lightning?
That's a whole different thing.
Oh, sounds painful.
Downright disturbing. Now, we should get into why it's called Shaman's Portal. We didn't really touch on that. And that's because it was originally a shaman's meditation ground who would do these rituals that would summon spirits, and they would talk to the undead and very ritual-based. I studied it and looked into it a little bit, but it goes deep. It's practiced all over the world.
Shamans, right?
Shaman.
Shaman.
Shaman. Ultra.
Shaman.
Good toilet paper.
But pretty much these guys would talk to the dead and would summon spirits.
Good place to do it. There's a lot of people missing out there, so.
Exactly. That's going to kind of close our tale on Coronado, but now we get a chance to jump into a more modern tale. In February 1995, a researcher named Dr. Mark Thatcher was contacted by an archaeologist from Oklahoma University. The archaeologist had been studying the history surrounding Shaman's Portal and wanted to put a very small team together to see if they could get to the bottom of these strange disappearances. Dr. Thatcher was a big part of the paranormal community at the time, so the archaeologist thought that he might be a good addition to the team. Now, this archaeologist, he didn't want his name revealed, so we really don't know much about who he was and...
Show me his credentials.
The accounts that we have are all from Dr. Mark Thatcher and his team, but you'll understand a little later on why everyone except him was so hush-hush about the whole situation. So Dr. Thatcher studied this area for 3 years. His team included a geologist that was able to conduct a variety of tests throughout no man's land. The results of those tests were shocking. There were two discoveries that baffled the research team. First, they discovered ionized soil cores, and the second was an electromagnetic interference that was off the scales.
So, you want to maybe explain a little bit about
ionized soil cores and electromagnetic interference.
Yeah. Those
ones. Oh, is that like in Godzilla when the American one where he puts the electric meter in the ground and he shocks it and gets worms out? Shocks the ground.
No, not really.
Yeah, the really shitty Godzilla.
That's the electromagnetic interference, which is a little bit more straightforward. The first one I want to actually dive into is the ionized soil cores, which, oh man. I read through a lot of descriptions of it and tried to get a simplified explanation. So, ionized soil cores are created from a soil ionization phenomena that can occur when earth electrodes are injected by lightning or other high pulse transient currents. As soon as the local electric field overcomes the electrical strength or threshold that a particle can naturally resist, in this case we are talking about soil, the air trapped in the soil particles is ionized. Basically what I'm saying here, this proves that an abnormally high number of phenomena that resemble lightning strikes occurred in this area. And Dr. Thatcher and his team, they described this as an implausible find.
Well, after that, I'm ready to give a presentation on ionized soil cores.
So is it like, instead of lightning coming out of the sky, it comes out of the ground?
It could also come out of the sky, but the whole area had ionized soil cores, which is typically something that you only find that is directly contacted by a high concentration of electricity.
So basically when they get overloaded to the point that they can't handle it anymore... It ionizes it?
Yeah, it's the...
It creates a portal.
The soil cores are... sure. Yeah, that's how it happened. So the soil cores normally have like little air pockets inside of them, but because they're hit with this high concentration of electricity, it ionizes and kind of creates those air pockets into a solid matter. And that's as like simplest I think I can put it, because I still just understand the very... bare minimum of
and
the topic.
I'd just like to point out, this is a question. Isaiah said lightning, but from the ground, but haven't you guys heard that lightning actually starts at the ground and goes up? Is that real?
Maybe it just starts in the middle.
That seems very unlikely.
All right, so we're clear as mud on the ionized soil cores and why that's strange?
Yeah.
Great.
Let's move on to the electronical things.
EMIs, electromagnetic interference. So the EMI is when a disturbance generated by an external source has an effect on an electrical circuit by electromagnetic induction, electromagnetic coupling, or conduction. EMI was regulated in 1982 in the US by the FCC to not pass a certain threshold of consumer electronic equipment, so no broadcast of any kind could have possibly been producing a signal that would have had an EMI like the one the researchers were reading. So pretty much satellites, radio waves, they all produce some kind of EMI, and those are just constantly in the air around us. That's probably what's giving us cancer, but of course we won't get that research. And they are regulated to only emit a certain amount of interference. And if it passes a certain threshold, it's illegal, and the federal government will crack down on you and get you in big trouble.
Like on an airplane. Having your cell phone service on?
Yeah.
Bullshit.
I've had my phone sitting next to a speaker, and I'll know I'm about to get a text because I'll hear a little, and then like a text will come in. And it was on my old phone, so it was older technology. Straight up. I knew a text was coming in because I would hear it through my speaker because it would pick up the... So I understand if with the older phones, maybe it didn't have the way, but I haven't heard that in years. Same with when I was doing presentations, we had to keep our, when I was an audiovisual technician for big shows, we had to keep our phones away from the receivers for our wireless microphones because they would cause extra interference. So I do get it.
You're telling me the plane has Wi-Fi. I can watch live television on the plane,
but it's not nearly as strong. But my cellular
service can't be on?
Those are like short waves compared to data. That's why I think just phones in general are so dangerous, because I don't think those waves that they're emitting are good for us.
Yeah, that's why you don't like leave your phone in between your legs while you're driving, because you'll get ball cancer.
Good. I think that's a myth.
Since I keep it on my hip, my balls are safe.
Yeah, because it's not near you.
No, it's fine. Apple Inc. did the research and said it's safe.
EMI, more like TMI.
Whoa, Isaiah. Zinger over here. All right. We got an understanding of these two findings they came across that were extremely abnormal. The findings were similar to the discoveries Dr. Thatcher found while researching the Bermuda Triangle. So that area in Beaver, Oklahoma is now known as the Bermuda Triangle of Oklahoma. So continuing their research, just when Dr. Thatcher and his team felt like they were on the verge of uncovering something major, some men in black suits containing very official government credentials showed up in the middle of the Beaver Desert and demanded Thatcher and his team to cease operations. Dr. Thatcher said that it was strongly implied that their careers would be in jeopardy if they continued. Just imagine random men dressed in black suits appearing in the middle of the desert. It sounds like the infamous Men in Black paid the research team a visit. Hey Adam, who are these Men in Black?
Whether it's in real life or in the movies, the term Men in Black is widely recognized, especially within the conspiracy theory community. You might be thinking of Will Smith wearing sunglasses and a black suit, flashing people with his little memory wiping device, or shooting his little 2-inch gun that blows him back. But this term isn't just used in the movies. It has been used to describe these mystery men that always seem to show up anytime something a little funky starts happening. Really, anytime anything supernatural starts happening, these men dressed in all black show up and basically make sure that whatever is going on is contained. There are kind of two different kinds of men in black that people think of in real life. The first is those who are solely focused on UFO and alien sightings, and some people even think that they're just actually aliens disguised as humans. And then second, just the mysterious men who work for unknown organizations or branches of the government that protect secrets of supernatural occurrences.
I think it's the first one. I'm pretty sure they are just aliens in disguise.
I like that one too. So the men in black, whether they're aliens in disguise or just secret agents of the US government, they have something in common: keeping the public from knowing the truth. Definitely the biggest area that these men in black show up is in regards to UFO sightings. Whenever there is a UFO sighting, the men in black show up and do whatever it takes to cover up the sighting. The government knows there are UFOs, and recently they've even admitted that there have been confirmed UFO sightings. Don't you think they would want to do anything necessary to try and cover up secret alien technology? Not just from the public, but maybe from other countries' governments? The Men in Black have been said to harass people who have claimed to see a UFO, they've threatened them, and even the most extreme, killing the witnesses of the supernatural events that they want to keep out of the public eye.
Yeah, ooh. These guys are creepy looking, though. From what people, when they've seen them, they say that they're really tall, and yeah, they wear a suit, but they have pale skin, like almost like plasticky looking skin, and they have, they're bald with no eyebrows, and they have like red lips. Like they're really freaking creepy.
That's looking. Like the only feature that's not just pale white is their bright red lips. Lumptious.
Yeah.
Voluptuous.
But there was a guy, there's a story about a guy that he saw like a UFO and then ended up accidentally running into it with his car or something. And he had like a piece. I don't know how real this is, but this is a story. And he had a piece of the UFO and he brought it home. And the Men in Black showed up. He said these guys showed up and they were wanting that piece of the UFO. And he told him he didn't have it. And then he threatened to like hurt his wife or something like crazy like that.
I mean, how else would they have known it was him if they weren't aliens?
Yeah, there was another story about the Men in Black. They like showed up at a hotel or something, and they were like harassing this lady, this front desk worker or whatever, about some, I can't remember the whole story, but they're like harassing him, and then they were trying to prove that it was the Men in Black, and they actually have video footage of these two really tall guys in suits, like walking through their area.
You never harass the front desk workers. They work so hard and they're so nice and have to put up with so many stupid requests. You treat them with the utmost respect. They just do such a good job. But I have seen that video Isaiah's referencing, and it's creepy.
Yeah.
They say they just don't know how to really communicate well. Like, they'll be very awkward, not make eye contact, and seems like just something's off with them. So that's where I think there's a little more to that story. But we'll have to dive into some of these occurrences a little bit deeper in the future, because the Men in Black, they have a lot of history behind them.
They're creepy.
They are.
They're probably going to start stalking us now that we're talking about them.
I think I saw the Slender Man.
Dude, they look like the Slender Man. That's like a good way to describe them. They're kind of slendery or slendish.
Slender and tall and white-faced.
Okay, I was going to say, what do we think the Shaman's Portal is? There's a few theories out there. Do you guys have any particular before I share what other people think?
Yeah, I think it's a Stargate from Stargate SG-1.
Could be. Absolutely possible.
And they are trying to keep it a secret.
I think it's a portal that goes into a hole into Antarctica, where ancient Aztecs have a pyramid in the ground. And then these aliens and predators battle each other and have a big old duel.
Hey, no more sugar for you, okay, bud? It's getting late. I feel like you're kind of on another plane. Valid theories. Sounds like really want this portal to be a portal. And it could be, that's actually one of the first theories, is that some believe there's a massive tunnel system under the Beaver Dunes that leads to a portal between dimensions. And that was what Francisco Coronado was hinting at in his journals.
So I was right. Because
he did talk about
Stargate.
Yeah, just underground cave system leading to a Stargate. Dude, but Stargates are so dangerous.
We should explore
dangerous.
It. Well, maybe a couple hour drive.
We could. We could absolutely go. We could go check it out.
Let's do it.
But you might not want to.
If any of you listeners want us to do a live video of us exploring old Beaver, Oklahoma.
Maybe not live, but you want us to do an on-site exploration.
Yeah, we could do an exploration.
We'll go deep into the Beaver and see what we can find.
Adam's got a GoPro. That'd be fun.
I have a voice.
You just got to bring yourself, Jamin.
I don't know. We might not want to go. This might be a dangerous expedition because others think that the land is cursed by the shamans that used to practice their rituals in the area, and the spirits of the Native Americans that were buried there still roam the dunes and lead living souls to the great beyond through a flash of green light.
So this is like Stargate SG-1 mixed with Pirates of the Caribbean.
mixed with Aliens versus Predator.
Because they're, like, dead, you know? And, like, when the moon hits them, they're all, like, skull and bone.
It's a bit of a stretch. I'd say more like Poltergeist.
No.
Pet Cemetery.
No.
Oh, Stranger Things. The Demogorgon.
No, it's Stargate.
I know what it is.
Okay.
It's a portal, like in Doom. There's a portal to Mars, and there's demons. It's a gateway to hell.
It could very well be a gateway to hell. That's what we're saying on here, is that there's shamans that are these Native American souls that are trapped there, that are leading them through it. But it's always a flash of green lightning.
So, Jamin, what was Dr. Thatcher's theory?
Dr. Thatcher, he has a different theory altogether. His findings resemble what was discovered at the Roswell crash site, and similar cover-ups were conducted by local and federal agents. Reports of government agents digging in the middle of the night have surfaced from people visiting the dunes in Beaver, Oklahoma. Dr. Thatcher believes, and I quote,
"It's not a portal, but a crash site. A downed space vehicle buried under the sand with its star drive still engaged."
According to Thatcher, the ionized soil cores, the high electromagnetic interference, the green lights, the disappearances, and the government's interest and activity in the area all point to one thing: aliens. Specifically, an old UFO underground that might still be in working condition.
Oh, let's go.
It's
you guys want to buy metal detectors?
Yes.
I need a metal detector that might be able to detect an ancient alien about 500 feet underground. What you got for me? The dude at the pawn shop will still be like, this is the what you need right here.
Yeah. Do you have anything that will... do you have a metal detector that will detect metal that we've never seen before?
It might not even be metal. No, we need an EMF reader, electromagnetic frequency reader, that we can take there and try to get some pings on it. Or find if there's some tunnel entrances that we can go into and explore. One of the theories is that maybe it's... I mean, if we're putting these together, maybe it's a UFO that used one of those tunnels as a docking station and then crashed inside of it or got stuck. And so it's still deep inside one of those tunnels.
That's what she said.
Maybe we'll never know. Maybe the government already found out and they're just trying to cover it up.
Get into my portal.
See, we can go to Little Sahara State Park.
That's not Beaver.
And discover all this.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's near there. Well, there's Beaver Dunes Estate Park, too.
See, we got to find the locals and ask them. They'll know more about where this might be located. We'll do a Blair Witch project on this thing.
Here's what we do. We can take my Jeep and we can do some sand dune bugging and then explore.
Isaiah, you're not going to focus whatsoever if we take your Jeep.
Maybe. We could just rent a sand buggy.
That would be cool to rent a sand buggy.
No, we're going to get 3 ATVs.
Yes.
Because that'll look super badass for our intro video when we all three roll up on an ATV.
I would pick...
with doves flying in the background.
The, like, Polaris two-seater thing.
But then there's 3 of us, Adam.
We'll get him a little friend doll to put in his side.
Well, you can get a 4-seater. I meant just for me. We each get one. Because then we can take our equipment.
Just a waste of gas. Okay, Adam will carry the gear with him. We'll go off some sick jumps.
He on X Games mode.
Oh, in the very end of Dr. Thatcher's note, this was written back in, the late 90s, I think 99. He ends his entire article by saying,
"To prove my hypothesis, I must go back. Anyone want to come with? Sincerely, Dr. Mark Thatcher."
So if we're able to find this guy, we might be able to get him to lead an expedition.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And it's only 3.5 hours away.
Not bad. Not bad.
How old is Dr. Mark Thatcher?
Not young. He'll be in Adam's passenger seat.
Yeah. You think he's going to be leading an expedition?
I don't know. It was really hard to find a lot of, like, in-depth stuff about him because there wasn't. I tried to find him. What, you found
he's
it?
He's dead. Yep. He died in 2013.
There's no way you found him.
Oh, wait. No, that's Margaret Thatcher.
I'm like, I looked don't know who that for is. Hours. Margaret Thatcher, isn't that the prime minister's kid? No, Mark Thatcher was a prime minister's kid in like the 80s that I did some research on and read his whole Wikipedia page because I thought it was the same person. It wasn't.
And okay, Margaret Thatcher was not the prime minister's kid. She was the prime minister
well,
of the UK.
Mark Thatcher is her son.
Yes, actually he is.
See, I did a lot of research and a lot of it came up useless. Like, I learned all about the prime minister's son from the 80s who got lost.
well, everybody?
In a race.
We'll definitely dive deeper into these mysterious men in black in the future. But that kind of wraps it up for this Shaman's Portal.
Shaman.
So if you want to give us a follow on our social medias, we have an Instagram and a Twitter. And you can find us at The Unsolved Dimension.
And if you want to send us a message directly and open up a dialogue and have a little back and forth, you can always send us an email at theunsolveddimension@gmail.com.
Yeah, and if you guys want to get on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a comment, we'll give you guys a shout-out on our next episode.
So you can catch us next time on The Unsolved Dimension.
The Unsolved Dimension. All you beautiful people, have a nice, safe drive home, a good rest if you're just listening to this on your break, or just nice weekend. Enjoy yourself. Treat yourself.
Peace.
Goodbye.